Yo, welcome back to another motherfucking episode of Kill the Mockingbirds. I'm your host, Sean Chris. Riding shotgun with me, as always, is Joel Thomas. What's up, man?
Brat, what's up, y'all? Having a good time, man. I am absolutely through the roof for this episode, man. These two dudes are off the hook, and they've got stuff that is just going to blow your mind. It blew my mind back when I first met them, so...
And joining us as guests, we got from Cryptids of the Corn, Justin and Jay. What's up, fellas?
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Yep. How you doing?
Oh, man. We're excited to see you.
So just for the audience, could you give a little like a little synopsis of who you guys are and what you do?
Sure. Be happy to. So Cryptids of the Corn podcast. We cover everything from major, you know, cryptozoological things like the Big Muddy Monster, or folk Arkansas instant Mothman. We also cover very little like cryptid encounters like the Scream Man out of Indiana and stuff like that. We do big questions about the field of paranormal, you know, cryptozoology and all that. We like to say it's where scientific and magical thinking combine.
That really is what it is, though. I mean, we were just talking about that, I think, on a previous episode about AI and stuff.
Yeah, no, we did. Because our last episode, we were talking about Lambda and the whole Google interaction with Blake. And he said that it's sentient now.
Yes, she's alive.
Part of that conversation, we talked about how he said that because he's a mystic priest. And he basically said that. What was it, Sean? That science is like magic. What we consider magic is science. Mm-hmm. And I kind of took that from like the Marvel Thor when Thor basically said that, well, it's magic to you because you don't understand it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's actually all science.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we did just talk about that.
I think that's a very accurate way to put it. It's all the same stuff. It's just whether you understand what it is versus what it isn't. You know, UFOs and everything, anything like that might as well be magic.
Right. It seems like a lot of like material science is like what we consider science, or what the experts consider science. Anything you can tangibly touch, smell, you know, feel, things like that. But I think there's a whole other science we haven't really tapped into, where it's more of a spiritual, like thought sort of provoking thing, or an energy science sort of that we're not really familiar with, or we don't entirely understand. And there's just a whole lot going on there that is magic.
Yeah, and it's easy to call it magic because then it's like, you know, you could be like, ah, it's magic, you know, like that. I think that's like the mainstream way. It's just magic, man. It's nothing. It's not a real thing. Like, you know what I mean? So they could sweep it under the rug because they can't explain it. All the stuff they can't explain, they call magic.
And I prefer the magic with the CK.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Justin on the phone the other day. We talked a little bit about that, and
we talked a while.
Things that we did, and one of the things that Sean and I talk about too, because I'm a huge fallen angel / gray alien spawn Nephilim guy. So we talked about the idea that, and I listened to some experts that know way more about the subject than me. So this is just me kind of, you know, parroting what they've said, but it made a lot of sense to me that, you know, angels were there like when creation happened, right? So they watched the quote unquote science that we don't understand happen in front of them. So their understanding and knowledge of a science that we don't understand is vast, vast, vast. So when you read like the Book of Enoch, when they were trading technology with humans to get access to the women, which I think is happening now, and I think that's gray aliens, but that's a whole nother story. But I think that the technology they traded is actual technology. I think like the Roswell incident, I think that's part of that, you know, movement, that deception, you know, in my opinion. And I think that's why there's such a huge influx on us through that we got through technology after that point in time, because I think that, yeah, it is all technology. And I think you're right, Jay and Justin, that it is like, it's just technology and science we don't understand yet. Well, I'll caveat though. I think there's some out there that do understand it.
That we the rest of sitting it. Here,
the majority
don't understand.
Right. The working class.
Yeah.
There you go. For sure.
Well, I have a couple stories that I would like to share, if you guys are good with that.
Please, please, please. We're ready.
So I'm going to go in descending order from probably the least mysterious to the most, if you're good.
Yeah, let's do it.
So this one took place 2 years ago. This is what you call my flash of light story. So I live in Ada, Ohio, a little town about an hour and a half from Columbus. At this time, I was working for a company out of Columbus. I had to go to the office this day super early. So I'm driving down 31, which is a main road by us, at like 4 a.m. But it's where most of these communities go and work in this big, in our, you know, it's our capital city. So it's always full of traffic. So I'm driving and I'm tired and I'm kind of nervous because I'm really tired driving. And all of a sudden, it's like daylight. Once again, it's 4 a.m. pitch black. And now it's like daylight. And I'm like, I died. I died in a car wreck. And I really thought I died. And this is what happens. You know, I'm in the waiting room. And then the car in front of me starts pulling over. So I start pulling over. There's a semi up the road pulls over. And we all get out of our cars. And it's like daylight with like a slight blue hue. And I'm like, okay, we're all looking at each other. There's probably 10, 15 people I can see outside the car. And we're just looking around. Like that, lights out. Back to pitch black. And nobody knows what's going on. I talked to one lady. She didn't know. She didn't see anything. So we get back in the car and go to work. And the whole time I'm hyping myself up. Like I'm starting to have a panic attack. Like I'm not know what I just experienced. But by the time to work, I'm calling my dad. It's probably like 5 a.m. And I'm freaking out. So he looks up. It was a heavy magnesium meteorite came into the atmosphere. And a lot of people experienced. It happened to happen right over where I was, Marysville, Ohio. So everybody was like lights on for like 30 to 40 seconds. And it really was. It was like daylight. Like I said, that slight blue hue. But I could see there was no shadows. There was no nothing. It was literally like almost like a welding torch light. You guys ever seen? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the light comes off a welding, like a welding rod.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that. I didn't see the ball in the sky. But I guess it would have been like the sun. I wasn't looking straight up at the sun. I was more looking that it was just pitch black. And now I can see everything. So that freaked me out really bad.
Well, that's funny you started with that story because I just recently saw a few videos that same thing, they caught it on camera.
Yeah.
I believe it was either New York or Philadelphia. I can't remember exactly where it was at. And you're right. Like it looked like daylight and then back to night. Like mm-hmm. it was very trippy.
And then,
hey, let me ask you a question about that too. Okay. So we know what was said,
the
magnesium. Right. Okay. So what are your thoughts on, and you can throw this to Jay too, both of you guys, like what are your thoughts that, you know, we know what they said it is and the scientific, you know, part of it is, and it could very well be that, but what else do you think that could have happened there?
So, you know, anything from some kind of portal opening and it spiking all kinds of energy and light energy just happens to be one of the forces of energy that's being, you know, produced. No sound though. So a lot of the portals, it's all conjecture, but there always seems to be some kind of a sound, whether it's almost static or popping or like a clicking, no sound. And if it was that big, I'd assume there'd be a sound to go with it. Why there wasn't a boom for the meteorite breaking up. So that's why the light stopped, is the meteorite broke up into a bunch of small pieces. So the magnesium, that's the main story. So the magnesium starts burning a lot faster. And when it's in a big chunk, it's just the surface is burning. When it breaks, it's like an ice cube, you know, it melts faster, the smaller the pieces.
Right.
But I mean, it could have been that. It could have been, I mean, everything from the government saving us from a nuclear blast, that it was a nuke intercepted, like way up there. But it was weird. I didn't see the thing itself. I only experienced the byproduct. But I didn't see no meteor shooting across the sky. But I guess you really would, because it would be either way, if it's a portal, if it's government, if it's a test, it's super bright. So it'd be like looking at the sun. You're not going to see a whole heck of a lot.
Well, my question is too, if it's a portal, that'd be a big portal. Like if you're seeing that much light, because I know of portals. And a matter of fact, you know, the documentary that I've got coming out in a couple months where we went out to Utah, the property I was on, there are portals that consistently open up on that property, but they're only like man size. So they kind of open up in the ground. Things will come out of them or you could go in them. You know, it's they're not like massive portals. So my question is, you know, when you're talking about big portals like that, I mean, would that be like coincide with like a, you know, hydrogen collider or something like that? I mean, you know, you got to start questioning like what was opening the portals. Now, I'm not saying portals can't open by themselves for something on the other side, too. There's got to be that conjecture you got to throw in there. But, you know, man, if it was a portal,
that's something big coming through. Well, I'm sure you've heard maybe not. About the portals that were seen off of New Zealand, like early or late 90s.
I've read a little bit about it. I haven't gone too deep down the rabbit hole.
This is a really unique one. It was like imagine like a garage door, a big, big rectangle. Mm-hmm. And these people, I had a couple dozen or more witnesses, and it's happened, you know, over a year period, several times. But it would be like a piece of the sky at night would open up like a garage door, and it would be red, but then for a minute you could see into it the other side. And it was like, it was one time it was sunny on the other side, and this is at night. So it's like a window, and they would see big black bricks come out of it. And that happened. I can't remember what years. I don't know that story super well, but those were supposed to be massive portals. I mean, truly massive. So if you have one opening vertically and it's sunny on the other side, there could be a lot of sunlight pouring through.
And you said black bricks were coming through it.
Yeah, that's what the ships or the things, they were.
Well, do you think maybe that's connected to maybe like the black cube of Saturn or something along those lines?
Ooh, because, you know, I don't know. It's all connected some way, shape or form, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just where's it coming from or what is it?
Yeah, or maybe that's all that they could perceive. We're talking upper and lower dimensional things. They would look really funky, even though that's not how they truly look. Our brains, our eyes are very, very limited. And your brain lies to you all the time. Here's one experiment you can do for yourself. Next time you're driving down the road and you see a bunch of ducks in your head, they're all mallards. Really look at them. There's 4, 5, 6 species of different duck, and they're all different colors. But your brain paints them all the same color. And you will tell yourself, because it's your brain wants the easiest answer. That's excess information you do not need for your day-to-day survival. So it paints them all the exact same color, so it doesn't have to worry about processing all these different animals. So it could be something that these big black bricks could not really be that. It just literally, that's all your brain can get out of that situation. And it's like, yeah, it's time to go.
Especially something we've never experienced before, like when you have no basis of what to connect that to. That's why I think a lot of stuff gets like messed up. Like, you know, when they used to do those experiments with people like on those History Channel and different cryptic shows they had, where they would show stuff to people and then every single person had a different, like it was 20 feet tall. This one was 8 feet wide. Like everybody had like such a off the wall, different, what they saw different shit, like completely. Like, and that's why eyewitnesses are tough too. I watched a Brain Games episode before where they had people doing the 3-card Molly and there was 20 people watching it. And behind them, they had a woman get mugged and her purse stolen. And then having the people try to descript, they were like, all right, now tell us what happened and describe the people. You know, it was crazy, man, to see only like one person got close.
Oh, that's nuts.
Remember, your brain, everything lies to you, including your brain.
I just read a story, too, about a property up in Minnesota about Bigfoot and really high activity. And they two guys actually witnessed a portal opening up on that property and having orbs come out. And one of the orbs actually materialized into a Bigfoot creature and it went to an area and where they were feeding it like peanut butter and stuff. And the orb and this Bigfoot went to that area and they watched it and they think it just consumed, you know, it ate. And then they both went back to the portal and it closed. but the Bigfoot kind of remained the color of the orb, but it was in its shape, yeah. But the orb stayed itself, the orb with it. And that was the only time they ever witnessed that, though. But I was going to ask you if you witnessed any portals. This, the one they described, it was like a rectangle, and it was like an orange hue to it. But it opened up like a big rectangle, not like a circle or anything.
That's wild. I've actually never run across a portal myself. So I've been in areas where there's been portals open up for sure. Plenty of areas. I mean, I'm actively seeking them when I'm out there.
Yeah.
In a weird way, I think that whenever things present themselves to people, I think it's always in the most odd manner, in a way that you're just really not going to get it on like footage or get it on camera. Or I think there are some people that maybe have, but I mean, government's confiscated it. So I think, you know, anything that's like definitive evidence. I can tell you this. The weird stuff that's happened to me, like the when we went hunting Dogman in Kentucky, the weird stuff happened when we put the cameras down, you know, and you get a few detractors that are like, oh, these guys are out there with the cameras, man. And then something happens. Of course, they talk about it, you know, and it's not there. It's like, yeah, but I feel like these entities or whatever. Because I'm not for sure what it was that I saw. I can definitively say that. I don't know what shook those trees to the core like that in front of me. You know, I lean towards it. It could have been Bigfoot, and I lean towards the quantum Bigfoot theory or like portal moving Bigfoot. I think that's those correlate a lot. And you were talking about the orbs, man. There's been plenty of sightings of Bigfoot and orbs around Bigfoot.
At this point, it's comical.
Right, it is. It's just a known factor. So, you know, we did see some things out there. Like Tony saw like this gray head that popped up, but the body itself was probably in the where the tree line was, and where these big trees had fallen, it had to be in the 7-8 foot range, and it was, to him, looked hairy. When I went deep in there by myself, like an idiot, like I do. running after it. You know, of course, the one day I didn't take my phone out with me to take pictures of it, I did run across a teepee structure, the typical teepee structure that you would see that people attribute to Bigfoot. It was really odd because these trees were huge, but they were definitely man or moved by something that had intelligence, because they were, it was like one tree that was still alive, but the other two trees were piled on top of it. Mm-hmm. But underneath it, though, were a bunch of sticks and like leaves and stuff. So I ran across that. That was really weird. You know, my buddy Ward, who does a lot of filming and stuff, and he's really deep on a lot of knowledge when it comes to fairies and stuff like that. He tends to lean towards the supernatural aspect of like the fae folk and you being able to move the trees the way they did and all that. I'm just very open to maybe it being all of it, you know, especially when you get deep out in, you know, the Danny Boone National Forest, and you know, there's been so much stuff sighted out there. I mean, it could be like two or three things that we ran across and we didn't know. It just happened to maybe a high activity area.
I wonder how often that happens, that if, like, we talk about with orbs and Bigfoot a lot. I mean, you know, Bigfoot's one of our big guys we bring up a lot. Are they just two separate entities that like the same habitat? Or are they co-occurring? Do they have a symbiotic relationship? Are they the same thing?
Or is there something else in the area drawing all these things to that area?
Mm. It just happens to be an area of high strangeness or something like that. And they're two separate species, entities, you know, beings, whatever you want to call them. And they don't, you know, they don't know if they look out for each other. I don't know if they get along or they don't get along. But whatever's there, maybe they both need like a... So for my old work, when we do endangered species surveys, a lot of times you find two or three endangered species together. Not that they need each other, but their habitat restraints and stuff like that, the stuff that makes them special, that they all find that spot, they all pile there.
Hmm. Wow.
Speaking of what you work, could you give a little like let the audience know kind of what you're into, like what you do?
So I did. I'm retired. Well, not retired. I'm done with that now. I tore my knee out last year. I just couldn't do it. Basically, I was a field fisheries technician. The short version is a field biologist. Wasn't technically a field biologist. I did the same work, though. So I did mainly fish surveys and habitat assessments. So I'd go in an area and study a fish assemblage and give a score for habitat in the species present. I also did a lot of endangered species surveys for both fish and amphibians, a mammal every once in a while, bird surveys, turtle surveys, that kind of stuff. So I looked for really rare animals, some of which, you know, are that big. Everybody, I'm showing up about a half inch.
Yeah. I think that's important too, because like, you know, that you're already kind of in that field of when you're looking for something, like, and you kind of understand how different species and or entities or whatever it may be, how they you're checking for patterns and what they do. Correct.
Yeah. So yes. But like you were saying earlier, that doesn't make my way of thinking correct in any of this field, sure. But it's a different for me from everything I've seen, especially on TV and the YouTubes and stuff like that. A very different way of thinking than most people put on this stuff, but it doesn't mean it right. It's just different.
No, but it gives a good, for me personally, I can't speak for anybody else, but for me personally, I think that gives you a lot more credibility because at least you have some practicing forms of what you're trying to do. You're trying to figure out and not just like, I seen this. And cause we all see stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, our brain's lying to us all the time, especially when you see something for a split second, your brain's trying to analysis what you saw and put it together. And it may not be, but once you're more familiar with things, I think it helps your brain to actually piece that picture together.
Yeah. And so I think that's what me and Jay have such a special relationship when it comes to our podcast, is it that I'm very much a biologically minded person. Not saying I don't, there's definitely a woo aspect to all of this. I just can't explain that with my background. Jay is the exact opposite, and I'm speaking for him.
You're right though.
He is almost always the woo explanation, the government cover up, the, you know, and it, we need it, you know, it's, and we don't argue ever. We have fun arguments, but we're never mad at each other about anything because we are very different.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Jay?
I think you hit the nail on the head. I just like to bring like every perspective to the conversation, whether it just be made up in my own head or something I read somewhere. I'm open to everything, and you know, I don't like to have everything set in stone, because like you guys said earlier, once you think you know something, you know, you're what's the right analogy there? Once you think you know something, you find out you're wrong. Mm-hmm. And then it's, and then when you can't, and then people, you know, don't want to, they want to fight that. No one wants to admit they're wrong and stuff like that. So I always say, even on our podcast, I always say, I know nothing. I don't know anything, but I'll say what I think.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knows anything about any of this stuff.
Exactly.
Truly.
The more you dig into anything you dig into, the more and more you dig into it, you realize you know nothing really about it or how it works.
For sure. That's why Sean and I connected so well when we did, because it was really a fluke thing. I reached out to him. I knew he was into podcasting. I just reached out to him because I knew he was into hip hop. And I sent him some of my music. And he was like, yo, this is dope. You want to come on the show? We did a few shows together, and you know, he and I were, you know, working on some music too. And then he reached out to me a couple months ago and was like, hey man, you want to do this like full time? And I was like, yeah, man. Cause like he and I are very much that way. We don't have the answers, you know, we're just going to give theories. And I love what you said too, Jay, sometimes it's just out of your own damn head. Like it's not necessarily something I heard somebody else say, but that's the part of like, using your cognitive receptors is actually being able to process things and come up with your own, you know, formulations and theories, because that's when you start getting closer to the truth. And to your point too, the closer you get to the truth, the further away you get from it as well. So
in some senses,
right. And I think that's part of it, but I think, you know, Sean and I really connected because we're the same way. We could be wrong tomorrow. If I'm proven wrong, I don't get mad about it. Like, it's like, oh man, I learned something new
today. Right. You adapt and you change.
Feel about it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, something wrong with that.
It's well, plus, wrong these conversations spark off ideas, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I might sometimes I'm in the middle of a podcast and I'm like, you know what? I never thought about it like that. And you kind of like we have on the spot theorize.
Mm-hmm.
What was the one? We had one at the end of an episode one time. Oh, it was the giant salamander.
You sure? I thought it was a snallygaster with the tendrils on his face when we turned it into an amphibian.
Yeah, like giant salamander.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Being an amphibian. It was like we were like 2 hours in recording, and then I'm like, we got to stop that because that's a whole nother episode.
But yeah, we theorized on the spot and it kind of made sense. Like, oh yeah, all right.
We never really talk to each other about the topic before we record. That way the ideas are fresh. Like the, you're forming your, you know, your thoughts as you're talking. And that's why sometimes we stick our foot in our mouth and sometimes it's really good.
Yeah. You gotta have both.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes great conversation though, too, because then you can, and people relate to that. That's what I think is important. And whether it's any type of media, whether we're talking cryptics, whether we're talking news, whatever we're talking about, is people are looking for genuine people that are like, yeah, you know, I got that one wrong. You know what I mean? Like, hey, it's totally wrong. They want that instead of the guy that's like, oh, today, and like, and they never admit that they were wrong or that they lied to you. And then people know we're not lying to them. They know we'll get it wrong. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh yeah, but they'll admit it. And they know, and that's what people want. Because in all this stuff we're talking about, there is no definitive answer.
Right.
Nobody will know in our lifetime. I really believe that for 99% of this stuff. At least in our lifetime. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think we may get close. I think some people may hit something here and there. But I think most of it is already known by a select group. And there's a lot of work to keep it quiet. Whether they are part of the phenomena or not is a different question. Whether they're just making sure we don't find out about it fully. I mean, there's, you know, 3,000 Bigfoot sightings a year in the lower 48 in the U.S. alone. And you want to I always say 90% of it's fake. 90% of it's a bear. Not necessarily a fake by a lie. Fake as in some poor lady driving through California, saw her first grizzly, didn't know what it was, and just got it for a second. And she's been watching the Bigfoot show. I was on TV. Mm-hmm. So she's got that mind space. I finally seen one. Or, you know, you just get these weird things, but. Even if 95% of 3,000 sightings a year are fake or are not truly something phenomenal, that's still 5% of 3,000. That's still something is being seen all the time. And until recent, I think in the recent, like the last 10 years, it's really changed for the mindset of talking about it. That, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, like we just had somebody come on the show for their story. Yeah, they didn't talk about it forever because they knew they're going to get made fun of. But doing this and stuff, they had a spot where they'd like, okay, I can tell these guys, you know, they're not going to make fun of me. And I think that's the important thing that we do. I mean, how many cool stories have we gotten?
Oh, more than from people I already knew or we both knew, and we never heard this story. They never spoke of it. No idea. And then we started this, and then guess what?
Oh yeah, we're the Bigfoot people now.
Yeah. Come out of the woodwork.
But to your point, there's tons of not even just like cryptics and paranormal stuff that happens to people all the time. And like to say all those people are wrong, not that you're saying that, but I'm saying that to people that like, you know, question like, oh, they're all lying or they're all making it up. I'm like, come on, man. Especially when you hear some of the people on different podcasts and stuff, you could tell when someone's like, they don't even really want to tell this story. They're just find a space. And that's what's cool about podcasting most of the time, because it's like audio a lot or it's a niche group. So they're just like, oh man, well, nobody really see it. So I can really get my story out. And you could tell because a lot of these people have never even, especially the people that have never been into it, they're like Bigfoot's fake, or you know, spirits aren't real, or none of this stuff. And then they experience it, their stories are usually a little bit more mind-blowing, because they're like, man, I thought this was nothing the whole time and now I'm scared.
I would consider us conspiracy and cryptid therapists.
That's a great, that's a t-shirt right there.
Yeah, it is. You bring people on and it's like therapy, because they're able to get these things off their chest and they're like, man, here's somebody that's not judging me, that's very excited about hearing this story that I've got to tell. I think it's important to have, you know, like you said, Sean, like niche areas that people can come out and talk about it. And honestly, it's becoming bigger than niche at this point, because when you're looking at all of the well-produced shows about cryptids and well-produced shows about the paranormal and all that coming out, there's a huge interest in all of that, UFOs, everything that people have. Because a lot of people have seen stuff that they just can't explain. I would go as far to say that most people, from the moment they are born to the moment they die, they've probably seen a couple things that they just didn't know or even could wrap their mind around. Maybe the mind lied to them, but there's just that possibility that there's definitely something.
What's that group that does all the surveying in the U.S. for all the weird stuff? Like anything from your favorite brand of cereal? It's that big survey group. I can't think of them, but they pull millions of people a year in the U.S. And they did one with that. Have you ever experienced anything unexplainable? It was something like 85% of people that answered the survey said yes. They didn't know what it was, but they have experienced whether it was a ghost or UFO or Bigfoot, you know. Just the book falling off the shelf. You know, it's like, that's never happened before. I don't live where earthquakes happen. You know, it's one thing if you live in California and you come down, all the books and pots and pans are out of the shelf. It's another thing if you live here in Flatlands, Ohio, and everything's off the walls.
For sure.
You want my next story?
What else you got for us? Yeah, okay. Let's go to the next
one. You've already handed around it a couple times. I don't know if you did it on purpose or not. The Hadron Collider.
Oh, man. Let's hear it.
Oh, my gosh. This is probably one of my scariest ones. When we do these fish surveys at this time when I was doing these fish work, a lot of these sites are on 5-year checkups, 7-year checkups, or 10-year checkups, depending on how much. Some are every year if they're more critical and we want to see improvement on these systems immediately, or what improvement. That's mostly with big corporations on big rivers. Because they can poison stuff fast and they can fix stuff fast. So it works both ways, you know. Our river systems, they bounce back fast if you give them the opportunity. They're amazing resilient. Like when the environment cleans up, those animals are right back in. That's kind of some neat stuff we get to see. But this was a spot. This is a creek in the headwaters of one of the surveys we were doing. This thing is maybe a half a foot wide. Okay, and we're looking for fish in it. And it's at every 7 year. It was at a lab. So we had a key to the back gate. They gave us a key. And when it was a lab, they didn't want us. Nobody does anything back there. So there's a little back road that's like not public. It's all grassed over and stuff like that. But we have a big work truck. We drive back to this gate. We take this key. So nobody on the crew I'm on has ever done this site. But basically, there's a piece of paper that explains everything. Contacts, you know, what to do. Here's the key. So nobody's been here for 7 years. Nobody on this crew has ever done this survey. So we get to this. It's a giant gate, big lock, put the key in, pops right off. We go in and we start walking. And then once again, this creek is, for people at home, probably that wide. There's maybe 1 to 2 species of fish in it. And we just have to do it because it's the headwaters.
So you said a foot and a half wide, right?
Is that what we're looking maybe at? Maybe an inch deep.
Okay.
It's a little creek ditch in the middle of a grass field. Okay. But we're checking water chemistry and stuff too. So we get out there and the backpack shocker is what we use for this. It's a big thing with a big metal contraption with a car battery and a big brat tail and this magic looking wand. And we get out, all of a sudden, all these armed guards and stuff come flying in. They got ARs, stuff like that. And we're swarmed and they're yelling at us. They're asking who the hell we are. How'd you get in here? Blah, blah, blah. And we're Midwest Barbara Institute. And they took all of our driver's licenses and the one guy that took all the paperwork left. And now we're just standing with all these guys with guns. One thing I did forget to mention is we seen a giant oil pipe just on the other side of this creek. I'm like, why do they need an 8-foot wide oil pipe in the middle of X state? So then we get swarmed and we're there for like hours. Finally, they come back with all of our driver's license and they take the key from us. And they're like, basically they had to call the old site supervisor. What had happened is that when it was a different lab, it was a public lab. And they gave us permission. They didn't really care. The old site supervisor, they sold this to the government. The government built a Hadron Collider there in the US, really close to us that nobody really knows about. The old site supervisor never really remembered that there was a fish survey crew and had a key to the back gate. So we all they took our cameras and made sure we didn't have pictures of anything, took our phones, made sure we didn't have pictures of anything. They luckily gave it all back and after that, they're like, well, this is no longer a part of your survey. We're like, yes, it's no longer a part of our survey. We will not be back. We did drive past it like a couple days later, and that lock and the gate had been completely changed. So it was kind of in a wooded tree like area. I don't think they knew there was a gate there. Because it just looked like fence line going into the woods, fence line, fence line. Then there was a gate in this tree in the, you know, this little forest, and then fence line. I'm assuming they thought it was all just fence line.
So let me ask you a question. How big was the hydrogen collider that you found there?
I only seen a little piece of it, and it was probably 8 to 10 foot diameter pipe is what it looked like from where we were. And that's the actual protective casing. But it looked just like an oil pipe, but it was huge. I mean, huge, 8-10 foot tall. And it's laying, you know, maybe 200 yards away. And we could see it. I mean, we could only see a small section of it, and it went farther than either direction we could see. But they had, I don't know where they seen us, how they knew we were back there. Cause you cannot see the main front of the property. You can't see anything from where we were. And they're like, oh, they did not believe us that we had to do a fish survey. Cause once again, this creek is like, just a tiny bit of water. And we're about to poop ourselves as these guys are screaming at us that we're lying and stuff. Like, I'm not lying. We'll leave right now. And then the backpack thing was making it even worse because they had no idea what the hell piece of technology I had. And because it looks weird. It looks, if you don't know what that thing is, it looks like alien technology. You guys seen the Ghostbuster backpacks with the thing they hold?
Yeah.
The proton.
Yeah.
Looks just like that.
Oh, yeah. So they were like, oh, man, this guy's about to do some damage.
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming they thought. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of people don't realize, you know, we talk about CERN a lot and because that's the biggest hydrogen collider. But there's a few in the U.S. I think there's a couple in Texas and a couple in another Midwest and a couple in like the Utah-ish area and stuff like that.
The ones in the Midwest are really small. I think they're a mile wide.
Are you thinking maybe that's kind of the range, maybe what was going on there?
That's what that one was. Yeah. We looked it up after and everything. And I won't say the name of the place or where it is, but it's very close to us in Ohio, in Michigan. Hint, hint, wink, wink. but yeah, it was, and it's just outside of a giant city, which was what bugged me kind of. This isn't built in the middle of no name farm country.
Wow.
This is like right next to a very, very significant population.
Now, do you think that's one of the reasons why, cause I didn't know this until I moved to Michigan. I'm originally from California, but that they have in Ohio that they have so much sightings of cryptids and Sasquatch and stuff. And then just so happens they have one of these hydro colliders right there. I would wonder if somebody did like some kind of study. It would be really cool to see like where these hydrogen colliders are, hydrogen colliders and the activity of cryptids.
Check out our Mothman season finale, part 3. Hint, hint, wink, wink. We go in depth with that. I think a lot of it, especially in the 40s and the 50s, was accidental releases. I think we were experimenting with stuff we didn't understand. And the cryptids are the unfortunate bystanders. They are these, most of the time, they're just animals, in my opinion. They're weird. So when I say biosphere, that means everything on our planet fits in the same biological tree. So we have these creatures that seem to not fit in our biological tree. So that would either, there's things called shadow biospheres that haven't been proven to exist on this planet yet, or they're just not from ours. You know, they're from somewhere else. And I think like the Mothman specifically never hurt anybody, always seemed scared. And almost, there's a couple stories where it tried to talk to people almost like, hey, help me. There was one where a guy accidentally cornered it and they both kind of looked at each other scared and they both just backed away slowly from each other. And there's all these, there's tons and tons of weird cryptids that are just don't make sense, but they do have a lot of hot spots around old government bases, nuclear test sites, EPA super sites, hydron colliders, gravitational anomalies, and quartz deposits here in the U.S. So I think the natural ones, these rifts, if you want to call them that, these holes, these doors that either get accidentally opened or purposely opened, I think they naturally occur above or in giant quartz deposits. And I think that's how we've always kind of had this weird stuff happening. But why in the 40s, in the 50s, did it skyrocket?
Yeah, spiked up then.
I mean, we were seeing all kinds of stuff that's not explainable. Most of it harmless. You know, there's not, we think of monsters, we think of these cryptids as these, you know, the dog man that rips apart a little girl. You know, you think of this stuff, but most of these cryptids, they just look weird. They have weird abilities. Yeah. They don't do anything. They're just raccoons from somewhere else.
Right. No, it's funny. Yeah, I got a friend of mine that knows a lot about cryptids, and he was explaining, you know, we talk about the metaphysical a lot when it comes to these cryptids too, which I think there's definitely a hard line correlation there with those, with that being the case. I don't think everything that's cryptid is metaphysical, but I do think that there is a huge portion of it. But one thing I never thought about, right? So when people think about entities, they always think about it in the sense of like good and evil, right? They think about like, you've got, you know, just for purposes that people understand, like you've got good angels and bad angels, right? You got your, you know, fallen angels and your angels that are on the right side. But there is this world, say these entities exist in a different plane, right, of consciousness, or like a different dimension. So what's to say there wouldn't be animals or creatures in this other dimension that weren't good or evil? You know, a tiger's dangerous.
They're just animals.
If you run up on a tiger, they're still just an animal. So yeah, something, yeah, that dog man might rip up somebody, but it doesn't
necessarily. So does a coyote, a wolf.
Exactly. There you go.
They're not evil. I think you're right. And I think we talk about that a lot. Is it most of these things I think are just animals from other places. They're not any more dangerous. Like you were saying, they're not any more dangerous than any other animal. You know, they will defend themselves and they will feed, but they're not, they're not breaking into your house to cause terror. You know, they're, you know, like how many, we have so many weird cryptids that have been seen rummaging through trash cans. Like they just want food. That's all, you know.
Just like a bear. Like a bear. How many bears have been in cabins and in people's houses because they're like in that area? They're not there necessarily. They're not like, yeah, there's a human in there, I'm going to eat it. They're just like, oh, it smells
like pizza. Like,
I mean, you had a Bigfoot that terrorized you for a couple of years, though.
And I really think it was all food driven. I mean, you've heard that story. It was with the horse grain, the chickens. Mm-hmm. It was easy food. And then once him and my father kind of had it out, he realized it wasn't easy food anymore. And that's when all that stuff ended.
And for anybody that wants to hear that, go to Eric's podcast, Uncomfortable. Justin's on there. Eric's a good friend of ours. He's actually going to be on the podcast in a couple weeks, too.
Episode 52.
Check that out. It is a fire story from Justin and him growing up for 2 years was getting terrorized by a Bigfoot. And it's a wild story. Justin breaks it down in a way that a lot of people don't. Go check it out. It's you know, incredible. Mm-hmm. But I had to throw that in there because it made me think about that when you were talking about food driven.
Yeah, that's that's the easiest way. It's a long story, so it's nothing we want to rehash.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. What else you got for us, man?
All right. So my last main story is not my story. It's from a man named Jimmy. I knew him from the work we did. This is all secondhand account. But the O'Hare Airport, I personally have worked around the O'Hare Airport, never worked in it. But there are waterways that go through that and stuff like that. It's very important to be surveyed and stuff. But they have a weird thing before we get into that story. They have signal jammers all around it. The big problem for when a person goes in to do a biological survey is our sites use a GPS little box and tells us where the site starts and the site stops. So we make sure we do the exact same spot every time. Because if you go 150 feet the wrong way, it can really mess up your survey. So it's very important. But so these things weren't working. And so this person was told by the people that were guiding them onto the property, that, hey, this is your start point, this is your stop point. And they had no proof of that. But it was already kind of weird. The rivers and creeks that run through the O'Hare International Airport are super deep. They're armored, is what it's called, which is not like actual armor. It's heavy rock banks. We call it armored because there's no really habitat there for animals. So it's heavy armored with a flat bottom, more like a canal. But they're super deep. They pump a lot of water through there. And unlike most of the area of Chicago, it mostly comes out clear. So it's kind of weird. Sorry, I'm adjusting. Get away from the table. I know I'm large and goofy. So this person was doing a boat survey. They put the boat in, they start surveying, and there's all of these drainage pipes into there, which makes sense. But there's some deeper that are, you know, sometimes 5, 6, 7, 8 foot in diameter at the bottom that are capped off, which makes no sense. There shouldn't be, if there, so I've never seen an 8 foot drainage pipe. I've only ever heard about them here. An 8 foot drainage pipe is monstrous. It, and that may not make sense to somebody outside of this, the stuff we did. But that's really big. It's stupid big. That's more like a tunnel that somebody could walk down, not a drainage pipe. You know, the biggest I've ever seen used is 5 feet. And I was also in Chicago in the main area. So the drainage area was monstrous. 8 foot, it just doesn't make sense. And then for it to be capped off, so there's two reasons it could have been capped off. Is it that it was a project that never came to fruition? They had some kind of planning? Or there's something under there, and they have that spot to make sure they can get access to water. And there wasn't, as according to this person, there wasn't one or two. They're everywhere. Both sides of the river, always just monstrous sized. It makes no sense. And the water is some of the cleanest in Chicago coming out of the international airport, which also doesn't make sense. It almost seems, once again, all speculation. It almost seems like that may be tapped into some springs, because the flow doesn't match, the water quality doesn't match the surrounding area, and it's just weird. But yeah,
so this is underneath the airport.
Yes, we're literally this guy was literally surveying the river that ran between two of the what do you call them, where the planes take off?
Runways.
Thank you, Jay. So it was literally running between two runways. So these things were coming from underneath runways. And they did do a survey really close to the actual buildings, and they seem to have more smaller capped off ones there. Not these monstrous big ones, you know, 5 foot still not small. But when you're comparing something that's 8 foot diameter. And then the whole thing with the signal jamming, like your cell phones don't work. If you're in the building, they work. If you're out in the field or out on the outside of the fence, they do not work.
That's wild.
And you can almost, I don't like being around the signal jammers. I've been on the outside of the fence doing surveys, like right up to the fence. I don't like being around them. They almost make your teeth hurt. You ever seen a signal jammer? A big one?
I've seen one before.
Okay. So these ones at the O'Hare, for everybody at home, they look like radio control tower satellites, the things that spin. They're like that, except they're putting off a signal. So basically, they're pumping so much signal out, they're making sure anything you have can't get signal. It's like throwing a blanket over. You know, it's just so much stuff that, like, your phones, for us and him, the GPS tracker, the GPS thing, just couldn't get a signal because there's just so much noise that it doesn't work.
So let me ask you a question. So you were saying it was either a project that they started and they stopped, or it's got to be something underneath. Now, if we're talking about all of these caps, and you're talking about a lot too, right? We're not talking
they
about
seen, the they've seen a lot of them. It wouldn't have been as weird if it was one or two through the whole survey. You know, stuff happens. And Chicago's been built on the corpse of old Chicago. So you can get weird stuff to happen in a river like that. This was a lot of them. If I had to guess, over 60.
So I'm going to hit down a little rabbit hole here, because anybody that's in conspiracy world knows a lot about the Denver airport.
Could
be going underneath there. So, you know, that's a kind of a more well-known situation, whereas this isn't well-known at all. Nobody knows anything about this. And the fact that there is a apparently something either was started or there is something going on underneath this airport. I just want to ask both of you guys, what are your thoughts on it? What you think it could be? And we'll just let it spawn from there. I'm very curious what you both think about that.
Well, I'm curious about this fresh water underneath it, natural spring, like he said. I wonder if they're using that.
Speculation. I don't know that for a fact.
Oh, yeah, true.
Just so that's clear for everybody.
From the survey, maybe that they did. But that's if it's clear spring water or something, I mean, I'm guessing there has to be a spring under there. And what would you need constant flowing, water for, if it's a nuclear power plant or something, to keep things, however that works, you keep cold water running over it constantly.
Even a small nuclear power, that's why they're on submarines and stuff. They have always an access to water to keep them cool.
So it could be something to that effect. But there's also weird stuff with just water flowing in general, especially like two different bodies of water flowing together. There's always like weird anomalies or things like that happening in that area, when whether it's paranormal or cryptid related or anything else related, UFO related. It always seems to be around areas like that, and a lot of like underground rivers and stuff that come together or that are just constantly flowing. I mean, I don't know what's going on, but there could be some correlation there with that river, with the airport, or that location in general.
I mean, what about the connection like Hollow Earth and tunnel systems and all that too? I mean, that's where my mind goes when I start thinking about anything underground. What is it connected to? Is it just some sort of underground base? I honestly believe that all underground bases are connected to this system that's under there that we don't really know about.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think, as far as the Hollow Earth theory, I wouldn't think that would be an area for an entrance, just due to what it's been like. Geologically, basically. It was the part of the Great Lakes there. It was flattened, and then it was part of the Inland Sea before that.
Okay.
So it seems like a lot of our giant cave systems are on both sides of the Inland Sea. We don't really have many that run through it, even though Mammoth Cave system does get up towards Chicagoland a little bit, but it kind of follows the edge of that shoreline. The theory is that an ocean sitting on top would kind of just flatten anything under it. That's a lot of weight. Water's very heavy. I don't know. I think that area, I think it's just like the Denver airport. I think it has stuff under it. I think it may be a safety bunker. There may be water purifiers on every one of those to make sure you have an access to water when you're living underground. It could be, I mean, there was not any, as far as he told me, running across like a full length. They always came in and ended inside. It could be like Jay was saying, they have some kind of power generator and they need to make sure there's always access to cool water. You do not want a small nuclear reactor if there's no water. Nuclear reactors are very safe until they get hot.
Yeah.
But it just seems like it was a hell of a lot of work, according to what they described to me. Yeah. It just seemed that's a lot. That's a lot of infrastructure, deep, dealing with water, dealing with stuff on top of it. I mean, you have, half a million pound jets sitting on top of it. It's.
When he said they were capped off, did he say like if they were cemented over or was it like a door?
So he described it. No, they make caps for the type of pipe, basically. The big concrete pipe, they make a cap that goes on it, and that's what was on it.
Okay. And can those be removed easily or no?
They can.
Are they meant to be removed or is it a permanent cap?
See, that's why I think he thought it may be an abandoned construction project. Because a lot of times they put that on to come back and work on it later.
Okay. Ooh, it's a time capsule.
Yeah, just to make sure mud and stuff. If you're doing something like that, you want to make sure mud and stuff doesn't get into it.
Well, let me throw this out there for you guys, too. Whenever I say a connection to Hollow Earth, a lot of times there's a couple theories that I have. One is a direct connection, like a tunneling system. Another is a portal connection. So that was the other part of it that maybe that you could throw into the mix there as well. Maybe that's kind of a protection for a portal opening. I think there's those two. I think those exist as well. So I'm just throwing that out there. So you definitely know more about geology than I do. So you can tell me, you know, like you said, hey, this doesn't work for that, but that's just,
that's a whole different ball game. Mm-hmm. And then Mothman has been seen all over Chicago the last 10 years. When I was working in Chicago a lot, we'd go out every night and look for him. Not every night, but every once in a while we'd go out and just watch the skyline and stuff to see, cause it was, he's still being seen in Chicago. And that's a whole other theory, that if it is a portal, that you have these weird things that slip out. And maybe Mothman is, because they're all over the world. They've been around, like the Blackbird or Chernobyl and all kinds of, you know. So maybe they're just like the raccoons over there. They're the common thing. So when you start messing with these doors, they're who slips through first. Not evil, not good, just there. They don't know what to do when they're here, so they just kind of hang around the entrance. But
what I first thought when you, and then I was thinking about the Denver airport as well, but I would like to know, like, how many elitists maybe have property around there? Like, you know, right? Is it a bunkerish type, like
very expensive properties all around there? So the city's called Rose City, and because they're the city of roses, they don't plant trees, they plant rose bushes.
Yeah.
So it is their water tower is a giant rose. They're very they have giant, oh my gosh, they have this water fountain. I only know about it because I've sampled. This is Rose City, just the northeast side of the airport. They have a giant man-made waterfall, water fountain monstrosity that we always had to see from the river. And it was stupid. I hate it. It's just stupid money. There's a lot of people in that area that have what we'd call stupid money.
That's what I think too, because, like, you know, around the Denver airport, there's a lot of elites from around the world that have property somewhere near there. And maybe this is just another, maybe this is the second tier elites, you know what I mean? Or, and because I do believe too that there is like underground bunkers. I think that there's paranoid people in the government and elites that think that, hey, we might have a nuclear holocaust or something may happen to the world where they're going to have to access that, which we've seen in plenty of movies. I don't know if you guys seen the movie Greenland. That's more recent. It's about like a comet or something that's going to hit the earth, and everybody kind of gets a text message, but not everybody, just a select few people getting this certain text message like, hey, meet us over here, and they're all going to go to Greenland. And we all know about they're talking about when the Nazis were making bunkers in Greenland, you know, and making that all. So I always think back to that when I hear stuff like this, that maybe it is a fresh water source that they're trying to have for everybody that they feel they're going to save when whatever, you know, whether alien invasion, nuclear blast, comet, whatever they want to claim. I think that is like a plan.
I can see it. I mean, if you had all the secrets that a lot of the elites have, you'd be paranoid too.
Yeah.
True, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're paranoid and we don't even know.
Right. Yeah, you never know when a comet's ready to drop in. You never know.
Yeah.
Or a solar flare.
I'm going to ask Jay something here real quick. So if people don't know, I met Cryptids of the Corn at the Salt Fork Lake Bigfoot convention. My buddy Eric, who runs Uncomfortable Podcast, was like, hey, come up here, hang out. So I was like, cool. Me and my girl went up there, and we ended up meeting you guys through Eric, because you had done some stuff with Eric, and we ended up hanging out by the campfire a couple nights, talking a lot of crazy stuff. And one of the things that Jay was talking about was Matrix reality, what he thinks is actual reality. And I just want to tap into Jay a little bit there and cut him loose, and
there you go,
he can let me know what he thinks about that, and we can, you know, see where that goes.
Well, I'm sure everyone's heard, you know, oh, we're living in a simulation or something like that, and I've listened to that and I was open to it, like, oh, it could be, there's certain things that could be that way. But I think as more as I think about it or dive into it more, we're living in a physical realm, yeah, but it's also like a spiritual realm, where it's these things that are going on around us aren't just what you see and touch and feel, but a lot of it's, you know, what your mind, I think what human minds can think up and create around us is really what's kind of manifests itself here in ways. And the more people think together or alike about the same things, the more those things manifest. And it's not as like magical as you might think, to where like, oh, if I think of a donkey, it's going to pop up here. It's more like me and him had the idea of building this house or something. We have the same exact plan and idea, and boom, you know, look, you know, if you put some time and effort and energy into it, there it is. You know, it's now reality. And I think it can happen a lot like that. If we all come together, you know, and think about things the same way, you know, and if everyone's not distracted by so many things, a lot of good things can happen. A lot of good things can pop up, but we can also see, like right now, the way the world is, I would say there's a lot of like trauma and chaos going on, you know, a lot of things that make you sad or upset or angry. And it seems to like that kind of is just shaping the world. And then you look at the world's kind of sad, angry, upset and scary and just wrong. You know what I mean? And it's maybe a little bit more simple than we think it is. You know, if we just change our thoughts, we could literally change. The world itself could change. It could reflect what we think. And I think the world is that. I think the world and what we live in is a reflection of your own thought of it or perception of it. And the more and more people kind of come together and kind of think more positively or kind of, I guess, get the truth. And I think that's why the truth's always been hidden. It's always like subverted. Like you might get a little taste of the truth, but it always tails off into some nonsense or something that makes no sense. And if we all actually knew the truth about, you know, everything, we could all sit down and realize, you know, we don't need to be fighting anyone anymore. There's no need for war. There's no need for so much stuff that we're doing. So much stuff we're spending our energy on could be on just making everybody, you know, happy and fulfilled in life. And that doesn't mean like money and stuff like that. It could just mean doing what you love. Like if someone just loves fishing, you know, the world would present them to make a living going out and going fishing every day because they love it. And then they can teach other people.
Are you taking a shot at me?
No, you're just the first example. Hey, my dad's the same way.
Justin's face. He was like, wait a minute.
But just for example, I'm sure if Justin could go out fishing every single day.
I used to.
And make a living doing it, he'd be, you know, the happiest guy on earth, you know? Just simple stuff like that.
I agree with that because I actually tell people that a lot. And it's not always easy to practice, but people always think, oh, man, you're crazy for thinking that. And I'm like, man, I go out every day and I try to put it like a positive attitude. Every single person I see, I'm like, hey, how's it going? I try to have small talk in a positive manner and try to lift their spirits because I believe the more positive energy I could put out there, the more it's going to get onto other people, you know, and it's going to spread like the same way negative energy does. But I think that a lot of people have that, especially with how society has now gotten nowadays, where we're stuck on our phones, especially after the lockdowns of 2020. So many people are separated from that human contact. You see a lot of people with their heads down and not wanting to socialize with other humans. And when you bring them out, you can see the light, like you can see the smile. Like, of course, there's sometimes people are having a bad day, but I try not to even let that go after me. Because even just more recently, like I had a comment, I actually erased it because I was going to say something real. I was going to light this dude up because I'm an ex-battle rapper. So every time I'm like, man, let me light this guy up. But like, I was like, man, I don't want to like have that on me. You know, the guy was basically saying like, oh, what do humans contribute to the ecosystem? Nothing but bad stuff. And humans should be wiped off the planet. And it would be great once they're gone. And I was like, at first I was saying like, well, you're human. So, you know, you could leave anytime you want, but I didn't want to insinuate something where he may do something. Cause then I was like, damn, I don't want that on my conscience.
Yeah, that comes out of you.
Even though so I think it's like trying to have better interactions with people. I've had a lot where I throw people off, like because I'm, you know, I'm not really for the jabbity jab or for masks. A lot of people assume that I'm a very pro-Trump person, which I am not, you know, like, but it's all these assumptions. And I think that we break down these barriers when we actually have conversations and show like love to each other, like the ability to have disagreements. Like, hey, I don't agree with you, but it's all right. Hey, you want to go get a beer after? You want to go do something, go fishing?
Oh yeah.
I like what you said too, Jay, about the Matrix, because that's kind of how I feel about it too. I think it's a spiritual matrix that we're caught in. I think when people get caught in the quote-unquote matrix, I think it's entities that cloud our vision Because I do think that, and back to Justin, what you just said about the elites, about the stuff that they know, I think there's a reason they don't want us to know the truth. Because I think ultimately, if we knew the truth, we'd find a way to be happy and coexist. And I think that's very important. And I don't think that, one, the elites don't want that because they want all the power and money. So there's that. There's that. And they've been, a lot of them have been bred through their family lines and everything else to believe that. So they're just as brainwashed. Don't ever think that the elites are somehow on a different spectrum than us. They just have access to more information. Right. They're just as brainwashed. They were taught this as a child the same way that we were taught things as a child too. So I do believe that, yeah, there is a physical world that we can touch, we can see, we can smell, we can taste. I do think there's a metaphysical world that maybe we get access to as we grow spiritually. I think that happens. But yeah, I think that, you know, and just to piggyback off of Sean, what you just said about positivity, I think we're all in agreement here in this podcast about positivity. You know, you get people that are so down the black pill, you know, everything's doom and gloom, and, you know, they're getting access to more and more information. And then it's just, they want to keep putting out this negative information, but not to help people to wake them up, but more or less just to keep this doom train going. Mm-hmm. I like this thing that was brought up about a year and a half ago, was the clown pill. I love it. It's the transcendent pill from the red and the black. It's the clown pill. It's when you can look at what's going on, understand it, and then laugh about it.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. Like, I see what's going on. I see the ridiculousness happening, but it's not going to affect my day to day in the positivity that I'm here to bring into the world. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to sit here and try to connect with people, try to help people grow. I want to grow myself. You know, we all four of us talked about before we got on air today about how that if we're proven wrong about something, that we like that. Honestly, you should love being proven wrong about something, or something you said was wrong, because you means you learned. And the fact that you can accept you were wrong and then grow from it, man, you just hit another milestone as a human being. And that's what I think that the positivity brings out. When you try to actively live a positive life, you're perpetually growing, and the people around you are growing. And then you attract people that like that atmosphere too, and before you know it, Jay, you're growing that community you were just talking about. You're growing this people, this group of people who, you know what, I don't care what's going on, you know, around me right now, like, I'm still gonna grow and be happy, and yeah, I'm gonna be smart and know how to operate, but at the same time, and God didn't put us here to hate life, and I don't care like what the devil brings our way, like, we're not here to hate life, and that's what he wants, and I just refuse to live that way.
I read this book a couple years ago. It's called Bringers of the Dawn. It was about a woman who channeled, she channeled a being that claimed was from the Pleiadian constellation. And it was interesting. And one of the things it said, though, was that there are beings controlling, you know, Earth or the realm, which would be like the elitist, but not like human beings, but like, I guess you'd call it alien beings or something. But they fed off human consciousness and human energy, and mostly our thought energy, but they fed off the negative energy. That's kind of like on Monsters Incorporated, where they'd scare the kids and they'd capture that energy and they'd power their
loosh.
It's, and that's basically how they would, how they keep functioning, how they stay alive, how they stay in control. And they said there's two ways to combat that. One way is to you got to cut off their food source, which means you got to stop the negative energy you're putting out. And once you change their food source, either one, they're going to starve and they'll leave, or two, they'll start feeding off your positive energy. And then everything will flip the other way to where they are, they're cultivating positive things to happen. So they still have a chance to live and exist and still be in control, but it's in a good way. And I thought that was an interesting way to think about it, because it makes things a lot simpler. You just think, you know, you dispel the negative, you know, all that negative stress and all the stuff that really doesn't matter. You know, you post something on Facebook and only got 3 likes and you're all upset because your friend Jimmy Woo has 30 likes on his. You know, it's little things like that, but people do get upset over that, and, you know, it can ruin their day. And you zoom out and look at the big picture. What are we here for? You know, why are we here? That it ain't that. I promise you that. It's not your likes on Facebook. It's not how much money you make. But
no, people really do. Like, when my page got nuked at 22K, a couple of my buddies, they were just like, man, what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know, man. The same thing I do every day, man. Just live, man. I don't know. It's like, I'll just build another one. It's not that crazy. Again. Like, first of all, I already know what I'm getting into. When I mean, I get it. Like, there's a lot we put into these things. But to me, I feel like once you build something and people know about you, it's going to come back. Like, they're not going to, they found me once. Mm-hmm. Like, they can find me again. Mm-hmm. But my one buddy, it took him like 10 years to get to 5K. And he's like, man. And I'm like, I just don't worry about it, man. I was like, especially my money's not attached to it. Like, when money's attached to it, I can understand when people have a little bit of like, you know, like, oh man, but you should have also thought about that. And I tell people, I go, really, it's my fault because I haven't built a website. I was like, I should have already had my own space. So really, I can only blame myself. And I think if we look at problems like that, because I can blame every single person I want, but at the end of the day, I'm in charge of me. And mm-hmm. if I don't take those steps to better myself or to get away from these things that I know can happen, then it's on me.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%.
And I think that, you know, what you just said, Sean, is so true too, especially in the spaces that Sean and I roll in and some of the stuff that we say, it's controversial. It's against the mainstream narrative and we're going to get pushback from that. And you have to take it. What happens to you, you know, it's going to happen at some point. I mean, yeah. I'm on my second suspension from TikTok, so I get it. Like, it's going to happen. You know, I just learned how to evolve and adapt in ways that, hey, I can still get the information out, but I can still fly on the radar as much as possible, too. So there's ways to do it. You know, just be smart, you know, and then sometimes it's just going to happen anyway. Like, you're going to say stuff that's going to piss people off. They're going to report.
Somebody's going to hate everything.
Right. And it is. And some people will genuinely hate just you and they will follow everything you do and mm-hmm. try to take you down. Sure. But back to that, like, positivity, I believe, and I don't know how everybody here thinks, but I've talked to all you guys and we generally agree on the same thing, that there's a higher power that is stronger than the negative power that's against it. So mm-hmm. when you believe that, when you believe in that God that's more powerful than Satan, Lucifer, whatever, you're kind of okay at that point. Like, yeah, stuff happens, but that's also to like knock you off the path that you're supposed to be on. You got to realize mm-hmm. that too. Sometimes when like more stuff's happening around me that's negative and I'm doing the right things and I'm going down the right path, I realize that that's just being put in front of me as obstacles and to deter me from the path that I'm supposed to be on. And then I realize when I push through, it's almost like you break through a layer and then it's like, then you go to this other like plateau and then you get beat up again. Mm-hmm. you keep leveling up, man. It's like Mario with the mushroom. You just keep leveling up.
Yeah, it's your perspective, man. Mm-hmm. Like I tell people all the time, I'm like, man, you can take away the podcast, you can take away the social medias, the websites, everything. I still can go talk to my family, my friends. Like I'm, you know what I mean? I can still live a good life. I don't need this. I like to do these mm-hmm. things, but it's not the main source of my life. The love energy that I get from the people in my circle is the most important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can't have light without dark. You know, you can't have black. Mm-hmm. You know, it's how it works. You need both.
One thing from something earlier is that humans are creatures of habit. Like you're saying, if you go out and you put on that positive mindset, it gets easier.
Yes.
It's hard at first. It really is, especially in the world we live in. Mm-hmm. But the more you do it, the easier it gets. But you got to do it every time. Otherwise, you're resetting. It's like jogging or running. You know, it's mm-hmm. the first time I'm almost 300 pounds. If I ran around this block, I'd be about dead. If I do that every day, you know, it gets easier every day. And I think it's the same mindset with the positivity and negativity. But mm-hmm. negativity, just easier.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier to be mad and be outraged and hate. And then, but like you're saying, positive mindset is what's really real powerful.
Oh, definitely. And I think, like you said, like the reason why negativity is so easy is because it's put around and dangled in front of everybody and people have gotten used to it. Like to your analogy of like, you know, going to do exercise or gym. Trust me, I go to the gym and sometimes I'm like when I first started, I'm like, oh, my God, I'd be like, just don't ever go back. You know what? You don't need to do this. Like, you'll be all right, man. You know, you're a funny fat guy. People like funny fat guys. So, but the more you go, you're like, you know, and then you start telling telling yourself, why is it good for me to go? And then I break down more than just like my health, but like, hey, the endorphins that I'm going to get from this, how I'm going to feel and not be in a depression, and like all these things that I can have the control of, instead of being under this, hey, I got to take this medication or this medication. I don't want that, so I have to do these things. Mm-hmm. And when you take the responsibility, which I think a lot of people don't want to do, is take the responsibility. They go, oh, well, somebody else will fix it, right? Big Pharma or this guy on TV, or I'll buy this book. And you're like, no, man, you got to do it. It sucks. I get it. It sucks, especially when we've let it get so far sometimes. But it's also, you can do it, you know? And once you get over that mental hurdle of like, oh, I can't do this, you can. But it's, you are the only one restricting yourself.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Absolutely.
Where else
we want to go with this one? Because we can keep going.
Yeah, the last little thing I had on my list, but we've talked about it all day, is the interdimensional bacteria theory.
Yeah.
That all this stuff, demons. And so we, like I said, we just did our Mothman season finale. That was 7.5 hours for one ep. Oof. Yeah. We did probably one of the most comprehensive dives on Mothman there is. I'll say that. I'll toot my own horn. I'll toot me and Jay's horn. That was a lot.
Yeah, that was quite a bit.
But, like, so the Mothman, it's the crazy thing with Point Pleasant. The Mothman wasn't the big character at the time. It's the only thing people remember. There was UFOs were seen daily. So much, people got annoyed with them. How often do you have to see low-flying UFOs? Be like, oh, man, it's that thing again. Like, to have that mindset about it, it's, you know, went from being something completely foreign to something you see so many times every day. We're like, ah. The other big one was poltergeist in the area of Point Pleasant and the surrounding area. There was like, what was it? It was like 3,000% up that year.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody experienced poltergeist activity in both Point Pleasant and Galapagos, Ohio, or Gallipolis, Ohio, however you want to say it. It's spelled insane.
But yeah, like stuff flying off the shelves, you know, things flying off the counters, cabinets mm-hmm. opening, closing all the time.
And then there was the Men in Black. All three types. I don't know if you guys done really like or talked about a deep dive in the Men in Black, but there's three kind of main types. There's the things that dress up like people that you can tell aren't people. There's the government Men in Black, and there's people pretending to be the government Men in Black. Like John Keel's biggest rival was the one that would always dress up like the guy, like to be the Man in Black. But all three of them were seen almost every day in both areas. And they were always kind of following each other, like a Three Stooges bit, where like the aliens would go in and out of a house, and then the government would be like right behind them, and then the guy would be right behind the government. And it just seems it's all connected. I don't care. So we talked about it in the episode. Why did the Men in Black care? Like, they never said anything about the Mothman with any of their interviews. They wanted people to stop talking about the UFOs. They didn't care about the poltergeist. They didn't care about the Mothman, which everybody's like, the Mothman's the thing that's scaring the hell out of us. Yeah, we don't care about the UFOs. But it's like, why were they so focused? And I think – so a lot of these doors we were opening on accident. I think there was an underground base under the military, the TNT ordnance plant. Because there was already a super large military presence. They had their own power. They had their own nuclear power plant. So it would have been the perfect place to hide because it's already heavily guarded and nobody's going to question a couple extra military trucks going in and out when it's already super military heavy. I think that kind of Stranger Things ask is that may have been one of the first spots that they were maybe messing with these doors. They didn't really understand. Mm-hmm. And that's why Point Pleasant had so, in West Virginia and Ohio in particular, have so many weird, unique things. And I think they just opened the door. And I think the Men in Black, the alien ones, or the demon ones, whatever you want to call them, I lean personally more towards demons. I think they want control of the door. I think that's the whole bit of control. So they can throw it open and get all their buddies through.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you ever heard of John Edmonds at Stardust Ranch? Have you ever heard about Stardust Ranch?
Have you? I don't think so.
So this is pretty wild. You were talking about different Men in Black, and it made me think about this. So John Edmonds, he's no longer with us now. He died recently, but he was actually on my buddy Tony's podcast called The Confessionals, and he talked about this ranch. It is a hub for portals and gray alien activity and everything else. He's, if I'm correct, he has killed like upwards of 50 gray aliens on the property. He used to have to chain his wife by her ankle to the bed because she would be floating towards these ships in the middle of the night. It got so bad that he was having to chain her to the end of the bed.
Oh my God. He stayed?
Yeah, he stayed. And of course, cryptid activity everywhere. Dogman activity, Bigfoot activity. There were some creatures that weren't even listed under any cryptids that we've talked about or anybody's ever talked about. But yeah, there was actually portals that would open and there would be people that walked through that would be from a different time period as well. So it was really odd. They'd have clothes on from like a whole different time period. They would be almost transparent, so they wouldn't quite be here, but they would be here and they would be talking about something that was going on back then. They didn't see anybody else around them, but then they would kind of just go through another portal and disappear. But one of the big things was when he moved there and all this stuff was happening, Men in Black would show up on the property. And he said they just had this look. They weren't human. They would pass through his gate. So physically through it and walk up to him. And he had these big confrontations with them where he came out there with his, you know, guns and, you know, would tell them, I'm not leaving and, you know, whatever. He's written, I think, a couple books about it. It's fascinating. You know, we're trying to get access to stay on the property, which would be nuts, but he's had people stay on the property and everyone that's been on the property has had a paranormal experience or alien experience. And it's not uncommon at all to run into the grays at all. I mean, they're just, he said they're so rampant. He was running around with some sort of, machete or some sort of katana and was killing them with that. He said that was the easiest way for him to take them out, but they would come in droves. But he said these ships would come through these portals, massive ships, like your typical like black triangular ones, and then you'd have a lot of the saucers as well. Pretty nuts, but it made me think about the Men in Black, and you said the three kinds. And that is one of the kinds that I've heard of. It's a very inhuman kind, almost alien, not really sure what it is, because it's almost like they have a dead look. It's not even like they have
hollow.
Mm-hmm.
So with specifically the Point Pleasant Men in Black, the alien war ones, is it one thing you said about phasing through the gate? They would show up inside. So Mary Hayes was the other big journalist there besides John Keel. They'd show up in her office and they'd get inside the building to see her and talk to her. So they would threaten her. Here's what they did. Like, we want you to stop talking about. And when they first came in, she said, they look like people. And then the more she's in there, the more they don't. The more you start seeing through the bad disguise and they start looking scarier and scarier. And they're like, we want you to stop talking about UFOs. And she's like, well, I'm not going to, you know, it's news. And then they asked her one more time, like, will you stop talking about UFOs? As this, the one on the corner grabs a piece of paper and he's writing stuff. And she's like, no, of course not. He folds it up and he slides it to her and they get up and walk out of her room. It was the address of every member of her family, their name and their address. Mm-hmm. And it was, but they had to get let out. They couldn't figure out how to work the door. So now the whole office is seeing these guys and they had to get somebody to let them out. So it's like, they never work the door to get in, but nobody was watching them then. Now that everybody's all eyes are on them, they're like, oh gosh, you know, we can't just go through this thing. Like, yeah, will you open that for us? We don't know how to do it. But it was so weird. And like, they seem to almost have like really bad disguises in general, but they use their mind to kind of make you see them as people. But when they're focused on one person, when they're putting a lot of their mental power, it seems like the facade fades fast, where you can tell it's like a balloon with makeup on it. It just looks demonic. You know, they look like lizards in suits. Excuse me.
I think you guys forgot a fourth type of Men in Black. It's Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith type of Men in Black.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
The Men in Black.
The Galaxy.
And then they usually do. Yeah, and they usually do like do stuff that makes it funny or to now that like if you
discredit.
Funny and yeah, discredit. So when you do talk about it, they're like, oh, you mean the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the cricket.
Which
gun.
One? Part two or three?
Sugar water.
But
yeah.
And then that makes me think of like you said, phasing through the gate and stuff like that. If you have the Men in Black showing up, that is, they are always scary. They're always very aggressive. I don't know. It's just one of the phenomena. We're going to be on America's Scary Land soon to talk about that specifically, the Men in Black stuff. We've got a couple books over there and stuff. We've talked a lot about the Men in Black, but they're always off-putting and scary. Like there was one story in West Virginia. Was that the Mothman episode or was that the Grafton monster with the camera? He's trying to get the camera from the kid.
I think the Grafton. I don't think it's in a...
So he was Jay. I use Jay as my bouncing board to make sure I'm on the right story. But basically this kid got a picture of one of these cryptids in West Virginia, right around the same time as Mothman. Like, I don't think it was Mothman. And he wanted the camera which was weird. He wanted the picture because it was a Polaroid and he wanted the camera. Like, why does he want the camera? Well, you now know that a couple last images can be pulled off of the inside of the Polaroid. You know, once you get a bunch of them on top, you really can't, but if it's recent, you could still get that again. And so he's talking to this kid. It's kind of in like a trailer park and the kid's not giving him the picture, not giving him the camera. And he just gets flat out, starts to like threatening the small child, and the trailer park turns on him fast. And then he didn't know what to do. And it really was like, he wasn't a person. Like, he was yelling at this kid in front of everybody, like basically threatening a small kid in front of all these people, thinking nothing was going to happen. And then it's West Virginia in a trailer park.
Yeah.
He's lucky. Yeah, then once they're all yelling at him, he just gets in his car and he takes off. Never comes back for the camera, nothing like that. And it just seemed like he didn't know what the people were going to do because he's not a person. You know, the scare tactics work when you're alone in somebody's house. But when there's 15 West Virginians that are looking for somebody to shoot, you know.
Yeah, and if you don't know about West Virginia, I would check. I don't know if anybody's seen the Wild Whites of West Virginia, like the Jackass producers did that. That give you a little glimpse of what you can get involved in if you piss them off.
Yeah. Don't do anything in West Virginia.
No.
Leave those people
alone. And they're like coal miners, man. Like they've been through some shit.
Tough, scary people.
Yeah, stay on the main roads there.
Very nice people if you treat them nice. You don't, you know, there's a lot of old coal shafts.
Well, I really appreciate you guys jumping on, man.
We had a ball. Thank you for having us.
Can you guys give everybody a shout out to like where they can follow you and find your stuff?
Sure. Once again, Cryptids the Corn Podcast. We're on pretty much every major podcast platform. I can't think of any we're not on. So if you can't find us, let me know. If you have a story you'd like to share or a story you'd email in, it's hardenbigfoot@gmail.com. You can find that on all of our pages and stuff like that. Join our Facebook group because we do like Cryptids and Coffee on Tuesday mornings where we just kind of have a big hangout session. And we do Cryptids and Cocktails throughout the week every once in a while where we get very intoxicated and just talk about stuff
on Facebook. It's pretty fun.
We're, you know, that's pretty much it. Yeah, we go to conferences and stuff like that. We do meet and greets. Facebook's the best place for that, just so you can, it's all on there.
Yeah, and we'll put all the links in the show notes so that everybody could kind of find you. And, you know, you can find me at Operation Kill the Mockingbirds on Instagram, Music Sean Chris on all platforms, and Kill the Mockingbirds on Telegram. Also, I just started a TikTok. It's Kill K with a 1 LL, the Mockingbirds. And Joel, where can we find everything for you?
Well, first off, I want to give a shout out to my baby Jen Saki. She knows I love her. I left two messages this morning and she didn't respond to me. I'm kind of sad right now, but she knows I love her, so I'll call you 8 more times tonight, baby. You know it's gonna go down. You can find me at Van Tesla Music at all platforms. So you could go to YouTube, find me there. You could find me there on Instagram. You can find me there on TikTok. I'm coming off the band, so I'm coming out guns blazing. And if you want to find the music, find me at Joel Thomas, or you can find Sean Chris, because we got a lot of stuff together. We got a new one coming out, and Quan Duke, who's my partner in Van Tesla.
Yeah, I think that we're going to end this episode like this. I'm going to end it with Joel Thomas's song, Bigfoot, featuring Tony Merkel.
Yes, sir.
All right, you know how we do it here. Wake the fuck up or get woke the fuck up.
Brah, brah.
Awakened from the forest in the depths of the abyss, this creature is a paradigm of time lost and time itself. It fears no one. It adheres to no rule that man can create. It forges its own path, and yet its path remains hidden from the world. The sphere of its existence is beyond most comprehension as it exudes its power quietly but transcendent. It needs no one's approval to exist, but yet its very existence is sought after by many. It watches. It learns. Adapts to the ever-changing environment around it, even as the environment is wrought with corruption. It battles the corruption only when pressed or for the protection of others like it. It is a mirage that few will ever understand. It's a cornucopia of knowledge from an era long past. It's free. It's Bigfoot.
My fantasies always consisted of making it big. My soul was nothing more than a bargaining chip. Marketing is what they tell you to do and what you're willing to give. LARPing to the fullest extent. I don't wait, I shoot first like Han on a Rodian. And people don't understand me like reading Enochian. Stretch thin like pulling an accordion. My heart ain't primordium. All these historians telling us lies. Setting aside everything is medicalized. Politicians selling the ride. A better or die where the relevance lies. They're dressing alike. Reptilians. My resilience is brilliant. I'm here to lead the rebellion on hellion, salient, alien.